Juliet Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello and welcome to episode 96 of Dogcast Radio. In this show, we have the Dogcast Radio news, and I'll be telling you how Buddy and I got on when we tried a rally course. But before all that, we focus on some health issues with an in-depth interview with Catherine O'Driscoll of Canine Health Concern.
Well, Canine Health Concern has been going since 1994, and it really started, I guess, before then, in 1991, when I had four what I thought were healthy golden retrievers. One day, Oliver, who was 4 years old, we woke up and found that his back legs were paralyzed.
Oh, dear.
We got him to the vet, you know, urgently, and the vet was a young locum. It wasn't the, you know, one of the experienced vets there. So he said, well, he's got a virus on his spine, don't worry. Leave him with us, we'll put him on a steroid drip, and he should be better soon. So very reluctantly, we left him there, and he wasn't happy being left either. In fact, I walked outside of the vets and collapsed against the wall in tears. Mm. Bear in mind, this is, you know, a long time ago, and Ollie was one of these one-in-a-million dogs. He was a very, very special little boy. He was just, you know, I just had to look at him to feel happy inside, and I think he had that sort of effect on everybody. He was just adorable. So I went back. I had my office at home, as I do now, and I sort of phoned the practice and said, could you check that the senior vet's seen him? And she hadn't arrived yet. So I just kept on phoning and kept being told she wasn't there or she was busy or what have you.
Hmm.
And finally, at just after 4 o'clock, I phoned again, and the locum came on the phone and told me that Oliver was dead.
Oh, my goodness.
So, you know, there you have it, a four-year-old dog just gone like that. Now, my dogs are my children. I don't have and choose not to have human children.
Yeah.
Dogs, to me, are people. And this, I actually defy any mother to say that her grief was more acute than mine. It was, I think, for about 2 weeks, I couldn't see where I was going for the tears. I was just wiped out and devastated. So then every vet I met for the next 2 years, I explained what had happened, and I asked them, you know, why had Ollie died, and nobody offered me any answer or any suggestion until I came to see a homeopathic vet called Chris Day. Now, what had happened in the meantime was, you know, Ollie had died. Sophie, who was another golden retriever, she had arthritis so bad in her front paws that she wouldn't get out of bed. She was miserable, and we considered putting her to sleep. Chappie, he had thyroid disease and ruptured cruciate ligaments, and Prudence, who was Ollie's littermate, she came down with leukemia.
Mm.
So God, I'm living with a family of dogs who I love dearly, and they're all suffering. I mean, my house was like emergency ward 10 round the clock. So that, for that reason, we ended up at this homeopathic vet, Chris Day, because conventional medicine didn't appear to be helping them or resolving anything. So I again described what had happened to Oliver, and Chris said, well, when was he vaccinated in relation to this happening? And I told him, and he said, well, it sounds like a classic vaccine reaction. And he explained that in practice, in his experience, because homeopaths ask a lot of questions, he was able to see a pattern of, in his experience, 80% of illnesses started within 3 months of a vaccine event, which is quite an amazing and shocking finding.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, at the same time, I'd written a book about golden retrievers to help me overcome my grief of Ollie's death, and in the process had met people all over the world. And one of them, a photographer called Susan Retzi over in America, sent me a scientific paper by a vet called Dr. Jean Dodds. And I sat and read that paper, and it was like reading the life history of my dogs. And she explained that in her research, she had found that since the introduction of modified live virus vaccines, which are the ones we use now, there had been a steady increase in allergic and immune-mediated diseases in the canine population. And she listed all the illnesses that my dogs were suffering from: cancer, leukemia, arthritis, allergies, you know, the brain damage, the list went on. So with my background in marketing, and my husband at the time, who's now passed away, John Watt, he also was a business person and a marketing consultant, and we decided to do a survey to test Chris Day's theory about 80% of dogs becoming ill within 3 months of a vaccine event.
Hmm.
Let me rephrase that, because it's slightly the wording should be different on that. If a dog was ill, or a cat or a rabbit, but we were testing dogs, if a dog was ill, when did they become ill within, in terms of when they had their vaccine?
Yeah.
And he, you know, so we were looking at that, if they're ill, how soon was it after the vaccine? And our own survey involved 4,000 dogs, which is a pretty high number for any survey.
Yeah.
And we found that, you know, that 67% of all dogs became ill within that 3 month period. And I have to say, most of them within the first week, you know.
Good.
But some illnesses take longer to develop. Things like cancer and arthritis aren't going to develop immediately. So, you know, that's a pretty high figure. And if vaccines had no bearing on any of that, then it should be 25% of dogs become ill in every 3 month quarter of the year. That's what you would. So that was the initial aim. We were going to do this piece of research. Dog owners would listen to it. We'd change the world, and that would be the end of it, and it would take about 6 months. And then we'd go off and live our lives like normal human beings. But it actually didn't work like that, because, first of all, we weren't known in the showing field. We weren't anything in the dog world. We were just people who decided to do something about something that worried us, you know, about dogs. So it was hard to get dog people to participate in the survey. So that meant that we had to start what I see in retrospect as a bit of an educational program to actually explain to people why they needed to participate. And then what happened was we published our findings. Some people took notice of it, but in general, nobody did, you know. So here we are on a campaign trail trying to warn people that two things, really. One is that, for a start, and I can say this with all the backup in the world to support what I'm saying, and that is that we don't need to vaccinate our dogs every year.
Mm.
Right, so we can minimize, if there is any danger, which some people dispute, from vaccines, then we can minimize the risk of those vaccines by not doing it every year. And in fact, what's happened since we started is the American Animal Hospital Association, the American Veterinary Medical Association, the World Small Animal Veterinary Association, and just this very week, the Australian Veterinary Association have made official pronouncements to say that we should not vaccinate annually, that we should not vaccinate any more frequently than every 3 years.
Oh.
And, of course, there are duration of immunity studies. That's basically where they deliberately try and infect vaccinated dogs. But these studies show that that dogs are immune to distemper, parvo, and adenovirus for at least 7 years by direct challenge, and 15 years by serology. So by looking at antibodies, they know that basically once a dog is immune to viral disease, they're immune for years or life. The problem is getting vets in practice to take any notice of that. And I have to say very sadly and reluctantly that they are putting income, booster income, ahead of the welfare of their patients.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in fairness, I mean, I take the point, but in fairness, I mean, for example, my vet, I asked to have my dog, my Labrador, titer tested, you know, mm-hmm. blood tested. And they kind of, I mean, I'm very happy with the vet, but they did look at me sort of like, why, you know, but they were happy to do it, so they sent it off, and when it came back, he was low. I can't remember all the constituents, but he was low on one of the three things. So, and she spent ages with me, and she got this great big book down, because I said, well, I only want him vaccinated for that then. So she got this great big book down, and she went through it and through it and through it. And I was with her, so she wasn't just fobbing me off. And she said, I can't find a single vaccine for this one. So, I mean, even the vets that are prepared to work with you and, you know, let you have that input sort of and try, it seems the system is against them because they can't get single vaccines, you know, if you needed them.
Well, again, you see, this is the whole problem behind what I'm trying to tell people is that it all gets terribly complex. But first of all, titer tests actually don't guarantee immunity. You can have a dog with really high antibodies circulating in his blood, and he might not be immune. And similarly, Dr. Ron Schultz, who's the sort of world expert in this area, and he's the man behind the duration of immunity studies, he's actually come out and said that if you have any antibody measurable in the blood, you can make an assumption that it's in memory and you don't need to revaccinate. And then you'll go to somebody like Hal Thompson at Glasgow University, who's our expert in the UK, and he'll say he would prefer to see a minimum level. But what they have, what Ron Schultz has said, and what the bodies such as the World Small Animal Veterinary Association, is that arguably if you give your puppy shots plus one booster over the age of 6 months, it's the likely that your dog is now going to be immune to viral disease for the rest of his life. One of the problems is that some dogs don't ever develop immunity at all, and you can vaccinate them till the cows come home, and they never will. In particular, the black and tan breeds like Rotties and Dobermans are sort of known to genetically, they just don't develop immunity. So there's a lot of caution around how often you should vaccinate. But I think the fact that so many now, that you know, including the World Small Animal Veterinary Association and so on, have actually come out publicly and said, we certainly don't need to vaccinate every year, and we should vaccinate no more frequently than every 3 years. And bear in mind that what they're actually saying when they say these things is, we are actually going to be sacrificing the booster income of our members. So they're not saying that sort of thing lightly. They're saying it because ethically they have to now. It's up to every individual pet owner to make a decision. And in order to do that, they have to, ideally their vet would tell them this, but my experience is that they're not going to.
Mm-hmm.
So they need to start to become aware of the issues and educated. And, you know, what I have done is when I... one of the things I did to help people in the dog world to become aware of the issues was I started to write a book to look at the different areas that might cause illness in our dogs. And I'd like, if we have time at some stage, to talk about food, but maybe a bit later. But I wrote a book called What Vets Don't Tell You About Vaccines. And when I started researching the book, I was looking at all the research to tell me and others, what are the dangers of over-vaccinating, and also that question, should we need to vaccinate annually? So I started researching that book, and whilst I was researching, I was just about to get another puppy, and I didn't know whether I would vaccinate that puppy. And I have to say that by the time I'd researched the evidence, I was so frightened of vaccines that I would be terrified to let one near my dog, seriously. The evidence is there. There's scientific... I mean, I've just written a letter to Veterinary Times. I'm just about to send it off. Whether or not it will get published is another matter. But there are 90 scientific references linking vaccines in with diseases caused by vaccines. And these are, you know, these are just some that I've just knocked up this morning. There are loads and loads more. And I can tell you that vaccines, without doubt, can cause the following diseases: arthritis. Now, that's not necessarily life-threatening, but it's crippling for life. Brain damage. All the veterinary and medical textbooks will carry reference to the fact that vaccines are known to cause a thing called encephalitis, which means inflammation of the brain, which can lead to lesions throughout the brain and central nervous system. It has many symptoms. Sudden unprovoked aggression, you know, suddenly you've got a vicious dog and you don't know why. The dog seems stupid, the dog's having epileptic fits, the dog has paralysis of one or more of the limbs. That's a symptom of encephalitis. Allergies, absolutely without question, vaccines cause skin problems, food allergies, and so on.
Yeah.
Cancer, without a shadow of a doubt, vaccines can cause cancer. In cats in America, it's been stated that 160,000 cats per year can develop cancer at the point where they stick the needle in, the vaccine site.
Good.
This is terminal cancer.
Yeah. I mean, I know we're about dogs, but I have to say, one of the most horrific parts that I've read of the article that you wrote that we've put on the Dogcast site is the thing. And I mean, this I sort of stopped everybody in the house and said, come here and listen to this. The thing where they are now vaccinating cats in the tail and leg in America so that they can amputate when the problem occurs.
Absolutely.
And that,
that shocking?
That really, really horrified me.
And the advice, meanwhile, from the American veterinary medical people was, yes, we know that vaccines are causing vaccine site sarcomas, which is cancer. So we need some research funding so we can find out which component of which vaccine is causing it. But in the meantime, carry on jabbing. But they're not telling people the potential adverse reactions. There's also research now that links vaccine site cancer into dogs and also ferrets. But if you look back in the history of vaccination, I've been looking at a timeline recently, you know, right from the start of vaccination, you know, where Jenner started all the stuff off, and there are numerous references to populations being vaccinated and then being having leprosy. Vaccines cause leprosy.
Good grief.
And I've come across several dogs whose owners have contacted me. They got vaccinated and suddenly their skin starts splitting. Hugely lumps of skin hanging off them.
Oh.
And the dogs had to be put down.
Yeah.
I've seen the same with humans who've needed skin grafts. So, you know, look, this doesn't always happen. These things don't always happen, but the risks are so high that I no longer vaccinate my dogs. And I think it's an absolute shame and scandal that vets are themselves mostly ignorant about the potential adverse effects of vaccines and aren't telling pet owners, A, you don't need to do it every year, and B, there are some potential adverse effects.
Yeah.
It's scandalous. It's scandalous.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, as you say, it's a very complex area. It's one I'm struggling with. But, I mean, another thing it said about sort of organ failure happening, and also this B and T cell function.
Yeah, now, this is when I was... I've often been asked to go and speak to dog clubs and lecture to dog clubs, and in the early days, in the early 90s when I was doing this... I was sort of a lone voice standing up and saying, hold on a minute, we might be harming our dogs. What happens when you say things to people like that, especially when they're relying on something like a vaccine to protect their dog from horrible diseases, is you cause some discomfort in the people you're saying it to. You know, the technical psychological term is called cognitive dissonance. I didn't know that at the time. All I knew was that I was going to these dog clubs and getting heckled and booed everywhere I went. And quite frequently people would say, oh, Catherine O'Driscoll, if a dog got run over, would blame that on a vaccine. So I had to go away and get more research to support what I was saying so I could put it in, you know, in front of people. And one of the things, I went into the Merck manual, which is, Merck is a huge pharmaceutical company, and the manual for humans is a big green, thick book, a bit like a Bible, and doctors will look at that when they're not quite sure what to do with you. And under childhood immunization, it actually states that patients with B and T cell immunodeficiencies should not receive live virus vaccines due to the risk of fatal infection. That means it can kill these people. So then I had to cross-reference and find out what B and T cell immunodeficiencies are. And in fact, what it is if you are in a family or come from a family with B and T cell immunodeficiencies, you're going to have allergies. You're going to have inhalant allergies, like hay fever. You're going to have food allergies. You're also going to have skin problems, like dermatitis, eczema, psoriasis, and so on. You're going to have neurological problems, so you might have epilepsy in the family, and also you might have heart disease in the family. These are all features of B and T cell immunodeficiencies. Now, the thing is, dogs have B and T cells, and they also have B and T cell immunodeficiencies. They all have things like skin problems, heart problems, neurological problems, and allergies. So they will have those. Not all of them, but most sort of pedigree dogs, you'll find that sort of thing in their lines. Mm. And in that case, you shouldn't vaccinate them with live virus vaccines because it could kill them. Can I actually say, if people would like to know more about this, then they're very welcome to email me. Can I add that to?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
So the email address is Catherine, CATHERINE, at Cars Grey, and that's CARSEGRAY.co.uk. And I'd be very happy to send people who are worried about the swine flu vaccine our latest newsletter, which has a lot of information about that in it.
Yeah, yeah. We'll put that as a link on the site so people can just click straight through to you. It really is. When you start reading this, you think, oh, my goodness, why don't more people know this?
I think that there is a problem, and that is that, and you know, what seems to happen is, until you have a problem, why should you know it? You know, what motivation do you have? It's really only, or tends only to be, after a dog's been vaccinated, or a child, or a cat, or whatever, and they have a reaction, and you know, quite a lot of the time it involves a dead dog, and. Quite a lot of the time people are grieving and they don't want to look any further. But sometimes people ask, why did my 4-year-old dog suddenly die? You know, they do ask that question. Yeah. And then they start looking for information. When I first started looking, in fact, Chris Day, he told me about adverse vaccine reactions behind closed doors and asked me not to get into trouble for repeating it. Nowadays, it's all, you know, it's all out in the open. You know, people like myself and others have suffered the damage of the needle and have spoken out.
This interview continues after the Dogcast Radio news. If none are neutered, a female dog, her mate and their offspring can produce 67,000 dogs in 6 years. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Hello and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Kate.
And I'm Nick. We start off today with some dogs getting into trouble, with a variety of outcomes.
Firstly, a border collie in Scotland called Kez, who had tried to bite police officers, was taken into custody and placed into the Edinburgh Dog and Cat Home. Kez's owner, homeless multiple sclerosis sufferer Robert Armstrong, visited his dog every week. Time was of the essence in this case, as Kez was found to be suffering from cancer. After shelter carers reported that Kez showed no aggressive or abnormal behaviour, a sheriff decided that charges of possessing a dangerous dog should be dropped against Robert, and Kez should be granted her freedom.
And having a famous owner is no protection against bad behaviour, as proved by Jacques Chirac, retired French president. His Maltese dog, Sumo, apparently became depressed and began biting and behaving unpredictably. Eventually, the Chirac family could put up with it no longer, and Sumo has been rehomed. It is perhaps telling that the pet was happy in the official residence, as there was a large garden, but after the family moved to a smaller house, his problems began.
Meanwhile, in the UK, there was a horrifying outcome after Sam, a 4-year-old Staffordshire Bull Terrier, was seized under the Dangerous Dogs Act in May 2009, 6 months after he had bitten a travelling salesman who called at the family home. Owner Melanie Hawes appeared in court before magistrates, and expert witness Dr. Roger Mugford was called in Sam's defence. The case went against Sam and Melanie, and a destruction order was issued, but Melanie immediately launched an appeal. However, during the appeal hearing, officials revealed that Sam had already been euthanized 5 weeks previously. The family is attempting to come to terms with the loss in these unfortunate circumstances. Who knows if the appeal would have saved Sam? We can only hope that this never happens to another dog and another family.
Now, from a very big problem to a very big dog. In North Dakota, Karen Weber is hoping her Newfoundland, Boomer, will be officially recognized as the tallest dog in the world. He weighs in at 180 pounds, is 36 inches at the shoulder, and measures a whopping 7 feet from nose to tail. According to Karen, the biggest issue with having such a large dog is that his tail is so high it clears surfaces around the house.
Size can bring problems, and dachshunds can suffer due to their elongated backs. However, for Henry, a miniature dachshund in the UK who ruptured discs in his spine, medical breakthroughs have restored his mobility. After his injuries, Henry was unable to walk, but scientists took cells from his nose and injected them into his spine, aiding the growth of new nerve fibres. This pioneering treatment may well help humans in the future, and now Henry is not only walking again, but wagging his tail.
And until next time, that's all from the Dogcast Radio News Desk. Goodbye.
In the original 101 Dalmatians movie, Pongo has 72 spots, Perdita has 68, and each of the puppies has 32. Our interview with Catherine O'Driscoll of Canine Health Concern continues now.
I talk to a lot of people, I interview a lot of people, you know, and vets and experts like yourself, you know, so the message has been drummed into me about being careful with vaccinations. But yeah. Then when you go to your vet, and as I say, I've had the trouble with sort of what do I do and the titer tests and all this kind of thing. And I'm finding it really hard now because it's been drummed into me culturally that to be a responsible dog owner, you know, and to have insurance and all this kind of thing, that I need to vaccinate. And it's really hard to fight against that.
You're telling me. I mean, I've been trying to fight against it for years. I'll tell you what the problem is. And I'm not a cynic. I really am not a cynic by nature. I'm an idealist. I believe in the goodness of the human race. I really do. I believe in the power of good. But over the years, time and time again, I've hit a brick wall. And this brick wall is this sentence, follow the money.
Yeah.
Vets in college are educated by a system that takes huge amounts of money from veterinary pharmaceutical industry. They take money from pet food manufacturers. They take money from the chemical industry. Our veterinary teaching establishments rely on funding from industry. And what happens is they dictate the curriculum. And I'll give you an example of that. Back in 1994, I was asked to speak at a lecture at the Royal Veterinary College. And two companies, a veterinary vaccine manufacturer and a pet food manufacturer, heard that I was speaking and threatened to take their money away from the college if the seminar went ahead. In the end, the publicity had already gone out, so it had to go ahead without losing face. It had to go ahead. And we had to share the platform with these companies, and they overran on time and basically almost made it impossible for me to say anything. But the point is that they have tremendous power. I know veterinary students who often contact us and tell us that they're not told any of this stuff during the lecture, but if they speak to the lecturer afterwards in private, they'll have it all confirmed. I know of scientists who have been kicked out of their positions, lost their research funding, for speaking out. It then gets into practice. When a vet is in practice, he has staff to pay, premises to pay for. He has business concerns to worry about. So he's been misled by his education, and he's also got a financial requirement to keep his practice going. He also has the influence of the veterinary profession that is trying to keep the status quo, that's trying to keep itself afloat, causing problems for anyone that speaks out.
Yeah.
It goes further in that most of the newspapers and magazines, TV and so on, are influenced by industry in terms of advertising revenue and so on, and who's got shares with who. The research scientists rely on funding from industry, and I know several who've actually had to frig the results in order to help a company sell its products. And our political parties are funded by the pharmaceutical industry, yeah. And political individuals like MPs get consultancy funds from pharmaceutical companies. You know, everywhere you look,
yeah.
The pharmaceutical industry has got it tied up so that you and I, the people on the street, actually don't get... And I know I'm sounding like a conspiracy theorist, and I don't want to, but it keeps hitting me in the face.
Yeah.
Everywhere you go, the truth is not allowed to get out there.
No. I guess that brings us quite neatly to how I discovered and contacted you, because a friend who is a member of Canine Health Concerns sent me your email concerning the press release where 33 vets and doctors from around the world signed an important letter, about it was National Vaccination Month, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And you sent that press release out, and as far as I know, we're the only ones who've actually published it.
Yeah, I mean, the letter was signed by, as you say, 33 vets from around the world and people with, pretty good qualifications, calling for an end to annual vaccination and protesting against InterVet's annual vaccination month. Now, for each of those vets to sign that letter is a big deal, because that happened the last time that happened, there was a letter published in Veterinary Times by 31 vets calling for an end to annual vaccination back at the beginning of this century, and quite a lot of them had a loss of business because they were referral practices, and there was a call for them to be struck off because that letter was published. So there are, powerful forces in place stopping people standing up and saying the truth. So yes, that letter was, I do think it was an important letter, that people ought to know that they don't need to vaccinate annually. And I've been saying this for years and nobody sued me, right? And you can't sue someone for telling the truth. That's why.
Mm.
It's an important letter and nobody published it. Why is that? Why didn't they publish it? Mm. Well, it just happened to be around the same time that we're being told we ought to go ahead and get a swine flu vaccine. And I think there's a link. The swine flu vaccine is still under production. It hasn't been tested. All pharmaceuticals go through years of rigorous testing. This is being whizzed out. So, yeah, we sent the letter to the press. It didn't get published.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? I mean, I don't know why. Maybe it wasn't that interesting a news story, but would you have thought that people would want to know that they're being encouraged to vaccinate, spending money that they don't need to spend, and potentially putting their dog's health at risk?
I would have expected it to be picked up, even sort of back on page 20 of the newspaper or something. I would have expected it to go somewhere.
Yeah,
wouldn't you?
But that's the problem with science. I know lots of people, and I know lots of eminent scientists who contact me. They've seen one of my articles somewhere and they contact me. I had one a couple of weeks ago from a professor at University of Illinois in Chicago. And he said he nearly fell off his chair when he read my article, my scientific paper, if you like, because I was quoting some research done at Purdue University, which saw that vaccinated dogs, but not non-vaccinated dogs, develop autoantibodies to a number of their own biochemicals, including laminin and fibronectin. Now, that might not mean a lot to a lot of people, but basically, when you vaccinate, you cause dogs to attack their own body.
Mm.
And two of those biochemicals, laminin and fibronectin, this professor from America, who is a cancer researcher, he said, we keep finding these autoantibodies in cancer patients. I am firmly convinced that vaccines are the major cause of cancer in humans.
Yeah.
Now, there's another scientist who has discovered that vaccines cause humans to have microvascular strokes.
Yeah.
which is pretty serious. It's talking about basically things like Alzheimer's and diseases like that.
Yeah.
And he can't get his papers published either.
I mean, as you say, when you actually start to look into it, it really is horrific. I mean, another thing that was interesting, but, you know, quite surprising, is the Open University student, Gary Smith,
yeah.
his theory on inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain that?
Yeah, I'm very lucky because people send me information and it all just comes flying at me. I'm like an information magnet. And one piece of information was a clipping from a newspaper which talked about a scientist called Gary Smith. He was studying with the Open University and he hit upon a theory that is astounding. And to basically simplify it, people have always felt that when there's inflammation in the body, it's the body mounting a healing response. So, for example, if you get stung by a bee, the body or the area swells up, and that's thought to be the immune system fighting to overcome that poison that's just been bitten in by the bee. But what he found was looking at the mechanisms of the body is that actually that inflammation isn't a healing response. What it is the disease-causing agent, whether that be a poison or a toxin or what have you, creating inflammation in order to hide from the immune system and wreak havoc undercover. And as part of his research, he found an existing drug that's already used for heart patients that turns that inflammation off, that enables the immune system to fight the pathogen, which is a disease-causing agent. And it would be a very cheap way of using an existing drug to help people overcome cancer. Mm-hmm. Now, when he first developed his theory, he was courted by scientists from all over the world and indeed governments. And when they realized that one drug could help resolve cancer, they all just dumped him. And the reason for that, of course, must be that you'd have the end of an enormous multi-billion international industry treating people ineffectively for illnesses using only one drug.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't like the way I'm sounding here. I hate having to say this stuff. But all I can say is that this is, you know, once you start looking into it, this is what you find.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, as I say, the article that you wrote for us is on the site now, and that will remain there. So, because it is a lot to take in, and if people want to go and read that, that is really interesting. And everything is referenced, isn't it? There's references to where, you know, where this is coming from. I mean, it is a really difficult area because you have, I mean, I don't have medical understanding. Obviously, you have, you know, educated yourself in that area. But as I say, you've got this kind of real dilemma because, as you say, you love your dogs so much and you want so desperately to do the best thing for them. And it's just a minefield that you're stepping through to find what is the best way for them.
The problem is that it's difficult to know who to believe anymore.
Yeah,
and all I can say is that from my own personal experience and also from the experience of thousands of people around the world, I mean, Canine Health Concern has loads and loads of members who have done it the same way as I have. And this is what we found over the last 15 years. And this is the case. What it is when I had, when I was a, in quotes, responsible dog owner and went to the vet every year and had my dogs vaccinated every year, and also fed the food that my vet recommended, which was pet food, I was literally in the vets every 2 weeks with one problem or the other. I had four dogs at the time and it was, you know, sickness, diarrhea, you know, all sorts of chronic illnesses until it started to get more sinister and we had autoimmune diseases, cancer, leukemia and so on. So in desperation, I started looking at alternatives and one of the things I did was change my dogs to a natural diet. So I stopped feeding them what I now call processed junk food, which is what most pet food is. It's, you know, basically, in my view, in my studied belief is that most dogs at the vets are being treated either for vaccine damage or chronic malnutrition, which is what you get from pet food. So now my dogs are on natural food, and that's things like raw meaty bones, chicken wings, all raw lamb, beef, meats, offal, that sort of thing. They also get some vegetables and they get a few biscuit treats. They don't get pet food. And Chappie and Sophie, who had so if you had arthritis, Chappie had thyroid disease, they were swapped over to no vaccines and real food at the ages of 8 and 9.
Hmm.
Both of those two dogs lived until they were 17.
Good grief.
Which for Golden is not bad. And Gwynnie, she came to me, she'd had her puppy jab, and by that stage I knew what a vaccine reaction looked like, and she was treated by Chris Day for vaccine damage. She passed away only last week, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry.
At the age of 15 years and 8 months old. And she had cost me in vet bills no more than £10 a year throughout her life.
So,
in fact, it was years since she'd needed to go to the vet. You know, she just died of old age. And I have two golden retrievers, Edward and Daniel, who are 12, and they too have cost me an average of £10 a year in vet bills. They don't get sick. They don't get diarrhea. They don't get hot spots. They don't get the things that you think of as normal, you know, with modern dogs. Edward and Dan have never been vaccinated. They've had a homeopathic alternative. They've never died of viral disease. They've never suffered from viral disease, as far as I'm aware. You know, they're just robustly healthy. And, you know, as I say, hundreds and thousands of people now over the world who are doing it this way. Our story is changing.
Yeah.
We're not having to pay pet insurance companies because we're not calling on their, you know, on their funding. We just have healthy dogs.
You know, Catherine, it occurs to me that you have set out the stall, you know, the ante, if you like, you know, the what you shouldn't do. Maybe we need to talk another time about all the things that you do, you know, and the positive side of it. You know, that would be good if we could do that another time and sort of really put the positive side of it. And not so much the don't do this, but hey, this is what you do instead. That would perhaps be good.
Well, what we've actually done is my husband and I, Rob and I, have been travelling all over the UK for the last 5 years, putting on lectures in order to do that. And basically, we just got knackered. We couldn't keep it up. So what we've done now is put those lectures on the internet.
All right.
And we've made them as cheap as possible, bearing in mind the costs of having a hosting website and all that sort of thing. So for £29, and I'm sorry to be advertising, but I want to spread the word, you know, about this. We have a series of three lectures that people can sit at home at their own, you know, in their own time and watch, which does show all the, not only the positive, but the how-to. You know, how do you feed your dog in this way?
Yeah.
You know, how do you... I mean, the other factors that we're sort of railing against are the overuse of drugs like steroids and antibiotics, which themselves are causing, you know, harm to the animals and actually aren't solving the problem. So we're also looking at, you know, if your dog's got skin problems, for example, how do you actually find out what's causing it and how do you treat it naturally without the side effects and also successfully? So all that sort of stuff is in our lectures.
Excellent. Now, you say £29. We have a lot of listeners in America. So can they get hold of it or not?
Yeah, I mean, if people... either email me or go to our website, we can send them details. But it's available worldwide, you know, and it's available for everyone. So we've actually had some people in Italy and France logging in, wanting to translate it so it can get out over there.
Excellent.
You know, so I think it's, you know, we are the ones, you know, that sit with our loved ones, our dogs, as they die. We're the ones where the buck stops. So we have a right to actually information that's going to enhance their lives rather than just fill the coffers of an industry that's already rich enough without, you know, the suffering of our dogs to add to it.
Yeah, definitely. I think as well, you know, yes, you're the one that sits there with them as they die. You're the one that has to look at yourself in the mirror afterwards and know, I did everything I could for
them. That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
And I think it's getting to the stage now that the propaganda, the paid for advertising, the insidious undercurrent handing out money to everybody that has an ability to influence pet owners, and I'm talking about vets and veterinary colleges and government and so on, it's time that we actually realise that we are being systematically brainwashed to buy products and to make organisations and individuals wealthier. At, you know, do you know our dogs are cash cows? Mm. They are such cash cows, it's a wonder they don't moo, you know. And yeah, we need to wake up to that, because once they've actually had the vaccine reaction or suffered, you know, death by malnutrition, it's too late.
Yeah, yeah. Catherine, can you tell me the website address where people can find out more about canine health concerns?
Sure, it's obviously www.canine, spelt canine, C-A-N-I-N-E, hyphen health, hyphen concern, .org.uk.
Brilliant. Okay. That's great, Catherine. Is there anything else that you wanted to say?
Well, I think your point is very valid, and that's, you know, I'm sort of going around spreading doom and gloom, which I, you know, don't happily do, but unfortunately, in order to break the belief in what we're doing, you need to actually explain why to people. But what you pointed out is there is a positive side to all of this, and the positive side is that, you know, by looking at it a different way and taking control yourself and looking at natural ways, you know, the most fundamental of which is to feed naturally, you start to get healthy dogs, and it is miraculous. It is seriously miraculous that you're not spending money at the vets. You're not nursing sick dogs, and that's the lovely part of it.
Yeah. I guess, you know, the healthy dogs bit, it's just its own reward, isn't it?
Well, I tell you what the difference is for me on a personal level was, I mean, it started when Ollie was four, and it went on for years, you know, nursing Sophie through her arthritis and trying to help Chappie with his cruciates. And then Samson came along, and I didn't know about vaccines at that stage, and he was paralysed in his back legs the day after his second puppy shot. Oh. His head swelled like a balloon, and he went running around screaming the night of his first booster. Oh. At the age of two, he was diagnosed with autoimmune disease, and he died aged five of cancer. And I trace all of that back scientifically to the day a vaccine destroyed his immune system. Yeah. But what's happened now is with Edward and Daniel and Gwynny, I've had, you know, 15 years of just enjoying my dogs.
Yeah, brilliant.
You know, before our house, you know, literally I was bunging tablets and remedies and trying to help my dog. It was a nightmare.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing that also prompted me to start Canine Health Concern is I started to talk to other dog owners who had more than one dog, who had several dogs, and were going through the same sort of nightmare that we were going through. You know, and what happens is if you've got one dog and he dies at the age of five from cancer, you perhaps think you were unlucky.
Mm.
When you've got several dogs and it's happening to several or all of them, then you start asking what's going on, and that is a nightmare scenario for anyone who loves their dog.
Yeah.
Or
oh,
dogs,
definitely.
You know.
Yeah.
So the good news is that it's ever so easy to do it a different way, and it costs less to raise a dog if you're doing it naturally. You haven't got thousands of pounds to pay out at the vet. You know, and your time is safe. You're not sitting in the veterinary surgery every other week,
yeah,
waiting to inject some sort of medication into the dog. All you're doing is you've got a healthy dog. And if 15 years down the line that wasn't happening, I'd probably have to go away and you know, not keep saying this. But those people who are Canine Health Concern members who are doing it this way are evangelical in their delight at the health of their dogs.
If you'd like to find out more, we have links on the Dogcast Radio site to Canine Health Concern, to Catherine's article, and Catherine's email address. An estimated 1 million dogs in the US have been named the primary beneficiary in their owner's will. Rally is a dog sport that's well established in the US, but is very new to the UK. As soon as I heard about Rally, I liked the sound of it, and I wanted to have a try. I've had to wait a while, but last weekend I was lucky enough to have a level 1 Rally course virtually on my doorstep, so I didn't hesitate to book myself and Buddy in. A couple of days before the course, I got a little nervous and started to look on the internet to find out more details about what I, and more to the point Buddy, might be asked to do. Level 1 rally exercises are carried out on lead, so at least I wouldn't have to worry about Bud going off on one of his meet and greets. I went to the Association of Pet Dog Trainers website, where I found downloadable files with the relevant signs and full explanations of what the behaviour involves. However, it was very good to get to the course and have Carol Thornley from Arisha Dog Training explaining in person what each sign required. When she mentioned the 270-degree sign, I panicked a bit as I hadn't anticipated trigonometry being involved. But each sign had helpful arrows on, demonstrating precisely which way you need to turn and in which direction to leave the exercise. One of my biggest challenges on the day was that my dog seems to favour the diagonal rather than the straight. It's something we ran up against time and time again in our Good Citizen Awards, and it's something we had trouble with again and again on the day. Carol told me I needed to teach a bottom-in command, and I hope she was referring to the dog and not me. The hope is that the sport will take off in the UK, and I can't see why it won't. What I most like about the sport is that with a very basic level of training, you and your dog can have a go. Like Buddy and me, you may not be about to win any competitions, but you will have fun. You'll be applying your obedience training, and most importantly, you'll be strengthening the bond between you and your dog. I also enjoyed the chance to meet up and have a chat with other dog owners. The only equipment you need for rally is the signs, which you can display in homemade holders to keep the costs right down. I did notice that during the session, Buddy began to pick up on the fact that he had to swing his back end in rather than out, and we definitely improved. I found it similar to our agility training, in that there are several things the handler has to keep in mind at the same time, not the least of which is to keep the lead slack. In the end, it didn't matter whether we performed better or worse than anyone else there. We learned something new, and we had fun. There's a saying in the dog show world that win or lose, you take the best dog home. I think we could add something to that. We should strive to make sure that our dog thinks he's taking the best human home. I can't comment on Buddy's behalf, but I did my best, and though his tail was wagging throughout the day, after the 3-hour session, he was very happy to get into the car for a snooze on the way home. Carol is planning a fun rally competition in the next couple of months, with the emphasis on the fun. Buddy and I are definitely up for that. You'll find links on the Dogcast Radio site to both the Association of Pet Dog Trainers site and Arisha Dog Training. So till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121 288 0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315 849 2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121 288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way, we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
A dog saw somebody putting money into a parking meter and reported to the other dogs. They're putting in pay toilets!